Watch The Atheist Experience live Sundays at 4:30 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytaxp and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callaxp.
It's time to get sexy on Secular Sexuality.
Welcome to Secular Sexuality, the ACA show asking about your brain cherry. My name is Christy Powell, and I'm joined tonight by one of only four show hosts able to escape a pair of handcuffs. Welcome back, Nate Smith.
Hey, it may not have involved the police, but there was definitely a uniform there.
That feels like a story that I don't need to know, but that, well, I will be thinking about as I try to fall asleep later tonight.
Oh, it's going to haunt you, buddy.
haunt. That's the word I was thinking of. Tonight's guest is going to be speaking to us about leaving the vanilla lifestyle and losing your kink virginity. Welcome back, Jason Friedman.
Hey, Christy, thanks for having me. Nate, it's good to do a show with you again.
I'm glad to have you back. We had a great time your first go around, and tonight we are resisting missionary work in all kinds of ways. You may not have had SecX pegged for this kind of show, but let's just see and see what develops. Now, if you'd like to further your bonds with us or role play along, give us a call with your stories and your questions at 512-991-9242 or at tiny.cc/callsex, because the show is coming right now.
Well, Jason, I feel like the odd man out since I didn't get to hang out last time you guys were talking. I'd love to get to know you a little bit. Why don't you tell me what's got you turned on right now?
Well, I'll tell you what's really been turning me on lately has been the recent research that has been done on serotonergic psychedelics in regards to Alzheimer's, schizophrenia, PTSD, and depression management. And it's really exciting because a lot of these, all of these molecules have been shown to be non-damaging, and they've been finding a lot more things that they thought they would find, like involving inflammation modulation and infection modulation. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, we talked to Grace Woods a few years ago about psychedelic-assisted psychotherapies, which are definitely something that I have studied and worked with in a very limited capacity. It is remarkable what we are learning right now and really, really promising. Kind of wish there weren't so many like idiotic sort of like Nixonian limitations on the research that we can be doing, but I'm glad to see that opening up a little bit.
Oh yeah, I feel the exact same way. And I agree with you. It's a real shame what happened in the 60s and early 70s and what a lot of people call a 30-year a dry spell in research, with research having opened back up in the late 90s. And, you know, where it is right now, like we were talking earlier about ketamine, which was interesting to me that ketamine as a dissociative that is used in surgical settings a lot of times has been shown to have practical clinical use. So it would only make sense to me as somebody who studies this in school that something like a serotonergic psychedelic would be even more useful. So it's really neat to see the stigma starting to finally die away.
Yeah. No, glad to hear it. A very brainy, interesting thing turning you on. Glad to hear about it. Nate, what's got you worked up right now?
Nerds. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually excited because I get to make a special announcement. This holiday season, the hosts of your favorite ACA shows are going to be going head to head in a team contest. But we need help from our community. So over the next couple of months, we're going to be asking you, the audience, to visit tiny.cc/ACA Holiday Survey 2022. Visit the link, answer as many questions as you can, and we want you to be a part of the mayhem this year. We need your participation so bad that as a special reward for helping out, we are going to be picking out some respondents at random, and we're going to be sending out some swag. So click the link, get on the action, and watch the host of your favorite ACA show duke it out come this December.
I was taking the survey earlier. I am excited about these questions. I'm excited about this game. I did not do so well in the competition last year, so eager to redeem myself this go around.
Hey, I beat Jim Barrows. I cannot believe I beat Jim Barrows last year. I was like, oh man, why'd I have to get Jim first round? But no, this one is going to be like everybody's going to have multiple chances to play. Everybody's going to be playing at the same time, like a team thing. I'm super excited. This is going to be so much fun.
Yeah, well, good deal. Let's go ahead and dive into the conversation if we can.
All right.
Yeah. So, Jason, I mean, you and Nate spoke a couple of months ago about what I'm going to maybe call your reawakening. I mean, can you give us a few words about your story or what it's been like recently rediscovering your sexuality?
Yeah, it's Nate had approached me about, because I had opened up to him about possibly coming out to my immediate social circle about being, I guess, what you consider pansexual. And I've been having a lot of, I had been having a lot of anxiety about it. Even though my group of friends is primarily a pretty liberal group, I still, living in Texas and living in Houston, I working oil and gas and fabrication, a lot of the people that I'm around are more conservative minded. Sorry, there's a little bug trying to get me. So it's okay. But yeah, I digress. So Kelly Laughlin contacted Nate and said, hey, you need to get Jason talking about this stuff. I said, all right, cool. I'll talk about it. And Nate asked me some pretty hard questions. And that was my first time publicly coming out. Up until that point, I had only told, my girlfriend, my daughter, a couple very close friends, and that's really about it. So for me, that's kind of like a, fuck it, jump off the cliff and, take the ride type of thing. But it's been pretty interesting because, I expected some weird pushback from people, but I have some friends that are extremely conservative. I have some friends that are Christian. I have some friends that, voted for Trump and, all those things that, kind of make you cringe, go out of their way to call me up and say, hey man, I was really brave of you. That's awesome. I love you, dude. So let me know if you need someone to talk to. Thank you so much. And these are people who are generally not very, they're difficult to talk to and have some interesting political convictions. But they too offered a considerate ear and a hand to shake. So I can really appreciate that. I haven't really had many of the issues that I know a lot of people have had to face. But I think that might also due to the fact that the way I present myself and maybe, sure. Things to that. Some privilege being a big white dude and things like that. So
no, I hear that.
Yeah,
sure. Well, I mean, in a moment where we are very, very divided as a nation and where there is a lot of really disgusting vitriolic conversation about removing, marital rights and bodily rights and these different things, it's good to know that the culture war such that it is has pushed the needle enough that like people can be gay or pan or whatever else without everybody around them having to be like a dick directly to their face about it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's really neat. And it's, I had a guy at work. He's like, hey, Jason, I know you're doing the whole psychology thing. Can I ask you a question? And I could tell he was really nervous. Like, he's like, I feel bad asking somebody about this at work. But I don't really know who else to talk to. He asked me a question. I'm like, well, here's some resources. Maybe this is a thing you could look at, blah, blah, blah. And I could tell he was having a real hard time. I go, hey, man, I don't really tell many people, that like I'm into dudes too. So, I appreciate what you offered up. So I'm going to offer this up to you, so it's like kind of tit for tat. And that dude really appreciated it. It's like, oh man, I really appreciate that. That's cool. Thanks, man. Thanks for sharing that with me. And that's been, and this is like at a fabrication facility around a bunch of welders and people in big trucks and Trump 2024 stickers. And it's just really odd that like the reaction that I've gotten from, I guess, the people that cause the biggest problems has been positive. Mm-hmm. And I expected different, but it's strange. It's just been positive all around. So I'd have to say it's becoming addicting to be more open about those things. So I like it. I like the response. So.
Well, what needed to happen? What did you have to sort of deconstruct or work out in yourself in order for these parts of yourself to start to wake up?
I drag you on the show?
I know. Yeah, I was going to say, where did this start? It was... is I had been married for a long time. And after all that got kind of worked out and I got in my new place and, you know, just went to the co-parenting thing with the kid, I had a lot of time to myself. And I just, I was a single dude for the first time in 14 years. So the first thing I did was I got porn on my big flat screen TV. And I'm like, okay,
of course.
I got porn. What I remember this, and it's like, what am I going to look at? I'm like, well, this is all boring. I go, what about the dudes? I'm like, no. It's like, yeah. So then I just, you know, just started watching the dudes and I'm like, I like this. I'm like, fuck, I've kind of always liked this. And I need to you know, maybe look into this. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like, it was just one of those things because I'd been having dreams about it and I'd been having real just kind of interesting. I don't know. It was just one of those things that's like was becoming a very present, real thing that happened and was happening in me. And I was having dreams about it. I was having dreams about coming out to people. I was open to my friend Natalie about it because she had started visibly transitioning about 2 years prior. So I spoke with her about it first, and she was the first person that I felt comfortable talking to about it. But then after a while, I just started feeling like a lot of tension and anxiety about not coming out, not talking to people, not really living like my most honest life. And I don't know. I think it just got to a point to where I was afraid, and I realized I was kind of living my life with fear, and mm-hmm. it was kind of stuck in a fear mindset. And I've never really, anytime that I do that, I get pissed at myself and I'm like, fuck that. I'm letting fear kind of rule my life. And that means I need to kind of walk forward. I don't know. I feel like I'm rambling, but forgive me. It's like I learned about that with cage fighting, that if I was nervous about something, that was a good thing. And I needed to press into it. I'm like, okay, cool. So if I'm afraid, that's good. That means I'm being aware. I'm paying attention to my surroundings. But like, if I'm still feeling that drive to push forward, that means I just need to listen to my awareness but not back down, you know? So
sure.
That's what I hear realizing that. About being queer. And by even saying that word, like that term queer for me, that was like, we were joking about that on the first show. I'm like, queer. Oh, that's new, you know? But now it's just like, yeah.
Yeah, I remember whatever. That. Yeah.
You know, just kind of be like, I'm bold and loud and kind of obnoxious about everything else in my life. So why the fuck am I not just going to be that way about this shit too? So I don't know.
Yeah, you leaned into queer pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm stuck on this image of Jason emerging from his bedroom after discovering gay porn for the like first time, letting himself watch it with a forearm like Popeye and like an avalanche of Kleenex coming out from behind him.
Yeah, no, it's one of those moments, one of those like rare opportunities that we have in life to kind of reset and ask ourselves, like after a breakup, we have this rare moment to say, what is our sexuality independent of everything else, independent of who my partner is and these different things. And it can be kind of a tectonic shift. I'd like to think that we don't need that type of breakup or that type of moment to take a second to stop and learn about ourselves. But it does seem to be a part of the equation for a lot of people.
You know what, though? It was for me, because after I broke up with the mother of my children, that was when I decided, well, you know what? Fuck it. I'm gonna live out my fantasy, and decided to try dating a guy. And I've never looked back since. So, yeah. And it wasn't even a particularly nasty breakup. So I don't think it has to be like that ugly experience that maybe we're getting at here. I think it can also be a really constructive spirit. It doesn't necessarily have to be born of pain. So
yeah, no, exactly. I don't want to picture it as somebody like sitting home alone, miserable with nothing but porn to comfort them.
Right.
But I do like the idea of each of us having a solo sexuality and being able to explore that, you know, perhaps with pornography, but oftentimes perhaps not. And to just recognize that our sexuality might line up with our partners, might be involved with our partners, but it doesn't need to be directly and exclusively tied to it. And in fact, I'd suggest that it can be kind of dangerous and unhealthy to put that type of inextricable link on something.
Yeah, for sure. I couldn't agree more. And we do have some folks that are waiting to talk to us online. Do you want to maybe talk to Christopher calling in from California, Chrissy?
Yeah, hey, let's do it.
All right, let's get him on here. Christopher, pronouns are him, calling in from California, and he would like to share some thoughts about putting sperm into a sperm bank and then getting a vasectomy to eliminate accidental pregnancy. Current climate of preventing abortions that you guys be all crazy about in the United States. Christopher, you are live on SecX.
Hello. Hi. Yeah, so I know I'm a little behind the game because that happened a while ago, but I just recently started researching it because I do want to have kids one day, I think. I'm still questioning that a little bit, but sure. I want to have that choice in the future, but at the same time, I want to be able to plan when I'm a parent. So
sure.
A vasectomy seems like a good choice if it's possible to reverse, but that's not 100%.
Yeah, no, that's all fair to say. So I guess you are worried about what happens if you get pregnant when you don't want to get pregnant and don't have a lot of options. It's certainly a right of yours that I would support to say, yeah, you can save up some sperm in a bank. You can have your vasectomy. If for whatever reason, like in vitro fertilization or some other procedure down the road isn't able to be completed with what you have banked, in most situations, you would have the opportunity to reverse your vasectomy and would still have sort of a quote backup. So, I mean, your plan is solid and valid, but elaborate, right? Like there's a lot to that.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't want to stand here and tell you like, no, don't do it. As a stranger on the internet, I'm not allowed to tell you what to do with your body, which, you know, if we could all learn that, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Exactly.
That would be really nice.
Yeah. But, you know, if you are calling to ask for advice, I do have to say it feels invasive. I don't doubt that there are a lot of folks, particularly women listening, who are like, yeah, it's not that invasive when you compare it to everything else. And that's valid, too. But I don't know. Jason, Nate, what do y'all think here? Does this feel like an appropriate response to the political moment we're living in?
To me, it seems like an extreme approach to birth control. But again, I'm not American. I don't live down there. So I don't know what that's like to live in that sort of culture. I mean, your body, your choice. Vasectomies are reversible. The shorter the time between the vasectomy and the reversal, the higher the chance of success, I'm led to believe. I mean, if I were faced with a complete ban on abortion, I might consider such extreme measures too. What do you think, Jason?
Now, I got my vasectomy about a year after my daughter was born. And the one that I got when I went in and I talked to my doctor, he had mentioned, I'm like, so I heard they're reversible. He goes, well, I can do one that would be pretty difficult to reverse. And I told him that's the one I wanted. So, I mean, that's my experience with a vasectomy. He did like a double ligation and then he did cauterization and burnt it back pretty far. Now, I guess, again, I can't give advice, but if you're wanting to have kids, you can always get the one that can be reversed or the sperm bank. I mean, I don't know. It's I don't know how much money. I mean, does it cost a lot of money to store your sperm?
And the vasectomy itself can be pretty pricey. What are you looking at?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I've done like a few hours of research, so I may not be getting everything, but from the sounds of it, it's only like $100 to $500 a year to store the sperm. And yes, vasectomies are expensive. I think some of the cheaper ones were a few thousand, and that's with support from insurance in America.
Yeah.
Can be pretty pricey. But I don't really know how else a guy could do birth control, because it seems to be all on the woman to do birth control too. That's the other half that I didn't really mention in the beginning.
It shouldn't be like that, but yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is sort of the nature of the conversation right now, but there is nothing in the world preventing you from carrying your own and being responsible for BYO condom, BYO spermicidal lubricant. Like, that is a responsibility that I think more men, more penis havers in general, need to take on and be responsible for.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. That's for me, whenever I got when I got the vasectomy done, I had already been married for 8 years. We were monogamous, and she was high risk. Like if my daughter almost killed my ex-wife and she couldn't have a kid again, it was just real bad, you know? So I got that as a way to make it easier on her. And of course, you know, I enjoy not having to use a condom, and I was with a consenting adult, and it actually turned out that she did have to have medical procedures that made her to where she couldn't have kids again, or kids, you know, in the future. But up until that point, you know, I put it on me. That way she didn't have to take birth control. We didn't have to worry about spending the money on, you know, condoms or anything like that. So,
So well, I hope that gives you some insight, Christopher. Yeah, we do appreciate you taking this on and taking on some personal responsibility here. I do wish more men were doing it. So hopefully you find the right option for you. Definitely that is a thing to be talking about with your doctor rather than, you know, your friendly local neighborhood internet podcasters. But we definitely appreciate you checking in with us.
Well, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay. You too.
That is I mean, again, I think that's a bit of an extreme response, but I mean, that guy's cooking with the right recipe, you know?
You know, asking the right questions. I definitely won't argue with that.
Well, plus he's taking responsibility.
That is the important component. Huge. And I'll be curious to just hear the chat sort of sound off about their experiences and whether or not this feels like a appropriate response, because it is difficult to know what is normal right now, what should be normal right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, we've got a bunch of folks on the line wanting to talk to us, so let's see if we can squeeze at least one more in.
Yeah.
I want to talk to Jamie calling in from Texas. Pronouns are he, him. And he's got a question, comment about going from online fantasy to reality. Jamie, you're on live. What's up?
Hi, I'm going to embarrass myself in front of the entire audience. So
I do it every Thursday, buddy. It's okay.
Yeah. So I did actually call in talking about fantasies in the online realm and virtual reality a few weeks ago, and I'm all for
it. Yes, I remember talking to you. You were talking about the VR, right?
Okay.
Yeah. But here's the cautionary tale that comes along with it.
Right.
So I met my now ex-wife through online chats, and we courted for a long while and became familiar with each other and shared a lot of fantasy rights, like role-playing writing, and she was very much into BDSM. Now, at the time, I was a virgin. In fact, she's the only woman I've ever been with. But I'd, you know, I'd watch pornography, I'd read things, I could imagine stuff. I have a good, you know, I'm a good writer. So I was able to pick things up. I did a bit of research. I learned terminology. I learned proper sort of the proper etiquettes and stuff like that. All kinds of weird stuff as well. Like stuff that was not really my bag and not really hers either. But I wanted to sort of immerse myself in it so I could be a better partner for her.
Yeah.
However, and she was a submissive. So I was topping her and I was comfortable doing it in this realm of fantasy. However, when I moved over, I mean, we saw each other a couple of times and, you know, had sex and it was great. Of course I was inexperienced, but enthusiastic. But we didn't like get into any BDSM stuff because it was short visits, etc. And she lived in Texas and I lived in England at the time. So when it came to moving over there, I didn't really know where to start. She had vast amounts of previous experience and kind of expected me to just start getting into it. And I found myself unable to really get into it too much straight away. And unfortunately, not to externalize the blame or anything, because I wasn't immediately commanding and immediately sort of masterful, because I just moved country and I didn't have a job and she was the sort of breadwinner of the family and I was a bit unsure. And this is my first full proper relationship. She got very disappointed that that I wasn't willing, like, I wasn't like taking the initiative. And it was one of the things that kind of soured the relationship over time, because the more she got annoyed with me, the more aggressive she got, the more angry she got, and the less I felt like I could do anything. Kind of like, how do you dominate someone in the bedroom when they are constantly like, I'm the head of the household, you do what I say, because I can't trust you, and so yes, that's my sort of embarrassing story, is that because I. And it kind of soured me on it. Not that I think it's a bad thing, and people are happy to, you know, absolutely do what makes you happy. But I'd oxymoronically have to be guided into being a top or a dom, because I've been burned so badly trying to do it in real life. So that's sort of my sort of horror story caveat to, and why I was saying in my previous call, be certain of what you're into and be certain of who you're talking to, and that they're not, because she was saying, oh, I understand this is your first relationship. Yeah, we can take it slowly. And she wasn't at all.
Sure. Yeah. I think topping from the bottom is never an effective dynamic and can lead to a lot of heartbreak. But Nate, what were you saying?
I think a lot of the blame here lies in this whole notion of traditional gender roles, you know, where the man has to be the breadwinner and the man has to be in control of the household. And if he's not, well, then he feels emasculated in the bedroom and then he's not able to play that role, which I think is completely, absolutely unfair. My partner and I have a pretty decent, cool relationship outside of the bedroom, but inside the bedroom, he's definitely on the bottom and that's where he likes. I think definitely a part of that problem is these expectations that men have, or perhaps the world has of men. Jamie, do you think that has something to do with it?
Not entirely. In that, I think it was the fact that it wasn't the man-woman dynamic. It was the fact that she had been, she was a very commanding person, and she didn't trust people to do. She'd had a lot of trauma in her past, which I won't go into, even though it's almost certain she won't like hear this. I will not go into the reasons why, but she had a lot of trauma in her past, which meant that she had like trust and abandonment issues. I was the dumb guy who thought I could be the one to fix someone, but you can't fix anyone. People can only fix themselves. She wanted someone who was almost a paternal figure, like someone to take care of her. And when you have no job, no power, and she had all the power in the relationship, like at least until such time as it turned out that she didn't. My entire life, like my citizenship in America, my home, my life, everything was at her whim. Like if she decided she didn't want to do it anymore, she could just go, right, off you go. It would have no effect on her. Right. But I would be stranded a continent away. You know, so
that's a
all
tough
these
setup.
And things were coming up. Jason,
what did you have to say?
Well, you know, I think you're kind of answering your own question, bud. It may not even be the top bottom dynamic thing. It might have just been your situation at life at the time. And I mean, I don't know, because like I'm very top, and I've been recently within my relationship trying out not being top. And my partner's highly submissive, but they've also been trying out being top stuff. And it's interesting switching those roles, and I can understand the discomfort. But at the same time, I've also been in situations, because I'm always top. I'm super dominant in the bedroom. But I've been in situations to where like maybe my job situation wasn't the best. My social standing wasn't the best. And my partner at the time was responding very negatively toward me because I wasn't top in like every situation in life. So I've had that happen with me as well. And that's understandable. And I think maybe if you get yourself in a better situation to where you feel like, okay, I've got my own shit going, I don't really have to rely on anybody any more than we normally do just as social creatures, right? You know, then maybe try that dynamic out again. I mean, so you try something and then you realize, oh, actually I prefer for there to be a 50-50 dynamic, or maybe I would rather be submissive. You know, I don't know. It's worth trying. You know, all you can do is just get a little more experience, you know?
Yeah. And to talk further on a point that you were bringing up before the calls were coming in, like having I'm happy to have a solo sexuality right now and be comfortable in who I am. Of course, when it all fell apart, I was burned quite badly, and I'm not looking for another romantic partner right now. Yeah, so when my mum says there's plenty more fish in the sea, and I say, Mum, my rod and tackle box are firmly put away right now. So thank you very much. I will try and make sure that I'm comfortable with the person before I start exploring anything of that nature, I think. And it wasn't really a question. I just thought the topic is BDSM. I have this experience, maybe as a cautionary tale or a springboard for conversation.
Sure. Yeah. Well, there's definitely a lot of intimacy that goes into kink, most forms of kink in BDSM. I'm not going to say that that is a necessary ingredient. There are certainly environments where that isn't the case. But even in those situations, there has to be some form of institutional trust. You know, even if you are not necessarily feeling particularly intimate and close to the person who's tying you up, you need to have them tie you up in a context and in an environment where you know that you're safe, where you know that somebody will intervene if something dangerous happens. And I would just encourage everybody to really take that safety seriously, not just their physical safety, but much more so that emotional and mental safety. Because even if nothing bad happens to your body, there's a reason why we tie people up. It's a very extreme emotional experience, or it certainly can be. And that's something we got to take seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jamie, I want to thank you again for calling in and sharing that. We want to get to one more caller before we get back. So let's see if we can't get Jasmine on the line. Jasmine, pronouns are she, her, calling in from Canada and wanting to talk about BDSM and becoming more conservative. My interest is piqued, Jasmine. What is on your mind?
All right.
Jasmine, you are live.
I was married to someone that was, yes, hello?
Hello.
Hi. I was married to somebody that was more open than I was. And I always kind of felt dragged along in activities I wasn't ever completely comfortable with. So I found after my breakup to my spouse of vaguely 20 years, I found myself not wanting anything to do with that community or anything other than the most vanilla of experiences.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry to better understand, after a relationship where it felt like you were being sort of drug into BDSM, a part of your healing process, or really even just a good palate cleanser, is getting away from that community and enjoying a much more like vanilla, simple lifestyle. Has that been kind of your story?
Yeah, in a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely sorry to hear that you were in a position where you felt like you were being kind of pressured and forced into these things. The fact that you are kind of repulsed by them now really indicates that that must have been an incredible challenge.
I'm sorry.
I think that makes absolutely perfect sense.
At times, back away.
Go ahead, Jasmine.
I mean, I can't say I didn't enjoy certain activities, but at this point in my life, everything about that, it just forces me in the complete opposite direction of anything to do with that community or lifestyle or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, and that's certainly valid. You know, I would say that could be true about any component of a relationship, but it is incredibly important to recognize just how intimate and close to the bone these things can be. So I'm glad that you've made that change. I'm glad that you have an opportunity for healing. And I guess I'll just say that all of these things can be very, very fluid. We can be incredibly fascinated with one specific kink today and then absolutely nothing tomorrow, and vice versa. And all of that is okay. As long as you are open to your own experiences, you're checking in with yourself, operating out in the world in an ethical way, it's completely okay for your orientation, for your gender, for your sexual interest to ebb and flow and shift and express a little bit of fluidity throughout a lifetime. So I do hope that you find the right relationship, the right orientation, the right connection for you. And I appreciate you sharing that story with us.
Yeah. Jason, did you have anything to add to that? You look like you're...
Yeah, I did. I think it's really neat, Jasmine, that it seems like you've set some boundaries in your life and you're holding those boundaries. And I wouldn't be surprised if, along with the BDSM stuff, there was possibly stuff in the relationship. Like you said, you felt pressured, you felt coerced. That generally has to deal with you're not consenting. So you're setting boundaries now and you're holding your boundaries. And by holding boundaries, people they're going to have to treat you better, or they're just going to have to go away. And I think that's really neat, you know, and I just say, stick with it and do your vanilla life, dude, you know, stick with it and stay healthy. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, maybe, there's a reason vanilla is the most popular ice cream.
Even if I do change. Yeah, I do like my vanilla. There's a place that has the best vanilla ice cream near here, but, whether I guess if my orientation changes in the future, I guess I should be open to that. But right now, I think I need something far more conservative than my previous spouse.
Yeah. Listen to your body. You know, that's good medicine. There's nothing wrong with it. And if it feels right to go slow right now to keep things a little bit simple, simple does not need to mean boring. And it's certainly not the case that there aren't incredible opportunities for romance, for sensuality, for even, you know, very extreme sexuality in a vanilla context. So, good luck finding those pieces.
Yeah. And I would just remind you, there's nothing stopping you from putting some sprinkles on your ice cream down the road.
Yeah. What was that final thought, Jasmine?
Yeah, a little bit of rocky road in them.
See? Yeah, there we go.
I was about to switch gears. One last comment.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I used to work in a field medical field, and the amount of vasectomies in my area at the time I was working seemed to be almost exponentially increasing. So I don't know what that means. Again, that's only relegated to my unit, my area, my experiences, but I just thought I'd make that comment.
No, I appreciate you sharing that with us. I am not aware of any statistical trends in that area right now, but God, would that be fascinating data, because I would not be at all surprised if the Dobbs decision was the final push for a lot of folks who may be contemplating it.
Could be. And Jasmine's in Canada too, where, you know, I hate to rub it in, but we don't actually have to pay for it here. So, you know.
Nice.
But Jasmine, thank you very much for calling in with that perspective. And I just want to echo what these guys said. You know, you do you. Do what makes you happy. Do what makes you feel safe, for sure.
Yeah, you're doing a good job, dude. Stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, folks, the Atheist Community of Austin produces many fine shows. And if you didn't tune into some of the other ones this week, I think you're going to want to watch this brief clip.
We are reckoning with really powerful forces. You know, I'd like to think that we can experiment and play around with our gender in a casual way, but I also want to say that these things are really fundamental to who we are as a person.
Unbroken love or something, which is not what Hitler meant by it. Mm-hmm. So if you could help me with that, that would be great.
Oh boy, this is the episode where I get to talk about Hitler. Wow.
My grandfather used to refer to clergymen in a certain way, and he's right in this case. He always used to say, here comes the gravy train of an easy life. And without a shadow of a doubt, this is Jesus pimping.
Do you get these kind of situations where you have like a female frog with like six or seven males like stacked up? Well, I think it'd be hilarious being a female frog jumping around with like this seventh male frog orgy tower going on behind you.
If you're
going
to make assertions that your God is the only living God, when I ask you why you believe that your God is a living God, you don't get to say, how do you expect me to do that? You were supposed to show up with your A game. It's not my fault that you aren't ready to defend what you believe.
Header back goes there. Some nice instruction to give yourself a big old orgasm, or better yet, give someone else one. And so when this arrived, of course, my partner needed to verify the efficacy of this pillow, you know, for science. And so I would just like to say from the bottom of my heart, this may be the only time I can actually say this and it be accurate, but Mr. Greg James, executive producer of the Atheist Community of Austin, thank you for the job.
Always a good time. All right, well, let's talk a little bit more, Jason, about this this sort of, I don't know, second puberty that you've been going through as you sort of like explore more of your sexuality after having been cut off from it for so long. A story that I know a lot of us relate to. What kinds of things have you been learning about yourself?
Well, so my partner and I, we she said I could talk about this. We have a growing box of toys that we've been steadily adding to. We just recently added restraints to our bed. We've added a strap on into the mix, and multiple different sizes. Yeah, I know. It's been, well, okay. So I'm like super top. She calls me a silverback and I'm just like, oh, I take what I want, you know, and it's, we have this like consensual non-consent thing going on to where we've already, it's okay. So I'm allowed to videotape whenever I want. But the thing is like, I just never tell her when I'm going to do it. And I just kind of it's like sneak attack. It's like consent. So, but it's agreed upon. And afterwards she's like, oh, you didn't ask me. I go, of course I didn't, you know, but it's like agreed upon that I didn't have to ask. Mm-hmm. So we play with those lines. But like we were talking about earlier, about the top bottom thing, that's been something that we've both been trying out. She's super submissive. She wants to be, you know, very submissive, and I'm extremely dominant, and we've been switching roles, hence the strap-on thing. And it's funny because and other stuff too, like adding some rougher aspects to it, a little bit well, we have safe words, but you know, a little bit of like violence play, a little bit of autoerotic asphyxia. I say a little bit autoerotic asphyxiation. And what's really interesting in that aspect is that people say there's this, you know, you have the safe, but with the safe word thing, I have to be aware that there's times that she can't say the safe word.
Right. Yeah. Like, people there's no need way. To be mindful about, you know, if somebody is unable to speak, like how do they tap out? How do they, you know, do we bring a squeak toy into bed? Like all these different strategies that have to be negotiated beforehand.
Yeah, 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 exactly. So we do three taps, you know, somebody tap, 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 you know, so, and I've done enough jujitsu that I can feel somebody tap out real quick and I let go right away. We have that. And also I'm learning that I'm a really bad sub. Apparently I still try to boss through the gag and I try to like still do stuff with the restraints on, you know, but I'll tell you the thing about I think we could talk about that's really interesting is that it's like once stuff with the butt starts getting involved, especially for somebody who's been evading their queer self for so long.
Sure.
It brings up a lot of emotional shit. And it's really fucking interesting. Like, so I recently discovered, you know, where Jesus put my prostate, you know, and it's pretty interesting because there's so much shame involved in somebody going fishing for that prostate that like, I remember when we finally, the strap-on came in the mail and I'm like, okay. And then after, okay, yeah, I don't know. And then afterwards I'm driving to work. I'm just like, I started feeling this wave of shame but I'm just like, fuck that fucking shame. You know, it's, I do what the fuck I want whenever my whole life, I reserve to do whatever the fuck I want, whenever I want to do it. That's how I live my life. It's how I always have. So when something starts telling me that I can't fucking do something, I just get really fucking pissed at it. And I just say, fuck that. So then I make sure I go home. I go, I want to try the bigger size now, you know? So
run towards the thing that scares you. I mean,
run towards the danger. Yeah.
I want everybody to be listening to their bodies. I want everybody to be mindful to, you know, take some of the cautions that we heard from our caller, Jamie, just a moment ago about, you know, how to go at a pace that feels right to you. But if something is scaring you and you know that you are safe and you know that you can work through it, the fact that it's so scary probably means that it's important on a certain level.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't need to dig all of that up. Like there's no requirement that you explore and excavate and unearth every dark, deep subconscious urge within your body, but you might be glad that you did for more reasons than one.
Yeah. Yeah. See, for me, it is fundamentally important at my point in this life for me to dig and excavate and unearth all the deep, dark holes in my life. And I don't know. It's really interesting because when I first met my partner, I was in a lot of turmoil about this stuff, but I was just like, this is me. Ugh. And she's like, I've never met a guy who was open about their sexuality. I'm like, well, sorry, you're stuck with it. She goes, I really like it, but I don't know what to think about it. My, my partner, she's a radically open DBT therapist.
She does,
you know, so yeah, you understand. So she has an openness and an honesty kink. And it's like literally no joke. Like it's like, if I tell her I watched porn earlier, she goes, oh yeah. Yeah. Did you try to hide it from, you know, it's really fun.
Oh, you are the perfect guy to scratch that itch, Jason.
Oh my God. It's great. So we play off of each other so well. So yeah. Whenever we first got together, I go, look, if I'm in a committed relationship, I'm monogamous, I don't cheat. But what I do know about myself is I have very poly leanings. Mm. And for her, she's monogamous and she's not poly in the least, but one of her biggest kinks is me being turned on. And sure. I'm the same way, you know, so it's even though she may not be turned on about me or being with somebody else or whatever, she's turned on about the fact that I'm turned on. Thus, So what's really interesting
and
is
it can work as a fantasy. Yeah. I think that's important to recognize. These things don't have to be acted out in order for them to be appreciated and enjoyed.
Well, no, I agree with that. And two, what we're really kind of venturing into right now is like, okay, I don't want to abuse the fact that she loves me and that she's happy for me and has that kind of that leaning. I want to make sure that she's actually informed, enthusiastic when in her consent, if we decide to make fantasy reality outside of like pillow talk and, you know, just teasing each other's brains. So yeah, I like that point that you brought up, because that's kind of where we're at right now in these discussions. It's like right now, it's like our little fantasy we've been kind of joking around with is I want to bring somebody in because I really like my partner tied up. I really like her restraint. Mm. It's like my favorite thing. I'm thinking about it. It's great. So awesome. But what I would really like is to watch somebody tickle her, because that's what she's into, shit like that. It's like tickle bondage and pleasure bondage, you know, no like genitals, like penetration stuff. But if they want to like give her an orgasm or something like that, like I would love to watch that, you know, and it's, well, okay. So then we've been talking about that lately. Who would it be, a boy or a girl or whoever? I go, dude, anybody. I don't care, just as long as it's happening. Well, okay. Well, maybe, you know, so then we've been kind of fantasizing about that and thinking about that and kind of testing the waters. But you know, we have all the time in the world. So I just want to make sure that if we do go down that road, that she's not just doing it to please me, or that it's actually enthusiastic, informed, and consensual.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. Well, to that end, I mean, you got to know your shit, you know, like Jamie was saying earlier. So what was your sort of entry point into BDSM, or your opportunity to start to explore those spaces and figure yourself out?
You know, like I had early on in my life, I was kind of promiscuous. And I had had a girlfriend early on where we did a little bit of stuff, maybe public or whatever. So we kind of went on like that, you know, kind of exhibitionist thing. But then like I was married for a long time and we had a pretty just decent, basic, kind of vanilla-ish, like we were talking about earlier, sex life. But I realized that there was a deficit, that I really like being hurt, that I really enjoy feeling too many sensations at once. I want to be overwhelmed. I want to be doing overwhelming. I have a daddy kink. I'm very much like I want to boss and be in control and things like that. But I also want somebody to like, I don't know. I really enjoy being hit in the face. I really enjoy being choked almost unconscious. And I really enjoy somebody trying to stuff something too big inside of me while choking me and me choking them. And maybe there's some blood and biting and scratching and somebody's losing oxygen. And I don't know. I guess being a cage fighter, it just kind of follows suit, that I like jumping out of airplanes and getting hit in the face and, you know, driving fast and getting in fights and fucking hard. You know, I don't know. It makes sense to me for my, like you said, what you said, like, it just feels right in my body.
Sure.
So, yeah. And it's really interesting that my partner, she's just game for whatever. But like, we've been having like different tides and flows with our sex life. And for a while, she was wanting like comfort and attention. So I did that. And that's real difficult for me to do like the slow game. But then I finally figured out the slow game, and I figured out how to do the slow game. And she's like, enough of this fucking slow game, you know, just wanted to see if you could do it, you know? So that's really cool. But like, now I've been trying to make her get more dominant to me. I'm just like, you know, I've been trying to get her. So she's been hitting me a lot more, choking me a lot more. And I refuse. Well, I'll only say my safe word if I'm getting tickled. That's it. I can handle
sure.
it. But like, as far as like, she can rest both all of her weight and both of her hands on my throat, and she can't choke me out. So she tries. And it's just,
there's a fair amount of safety, even when you're feeling unsafe, which I hear. I'll maybe just kind of whisper in everybody's ear that if you are kind of beginning to explore BDSM in these ways, I actually really encourage people to use their safe word a little bit too much. And I think that there's a lot of value in that, kind of going through the motions, practicing, even using it when you don't really feel like you need it, as a way of creating a little bit of mental muscle memory for yourself and a sense of security that like, okay, if I say it, I can expect what's going to happen. And it's not just some like break glass in case of true emergency sort of thing, but rather something that I know is readily available. That way I can feel a little bit more comfortable tiptoeing ever so closer to my limits and to my boundaries, feeling very, very safe that I can pull out anytime I need to. Mm-hmm. But I'm really curious in this idea of how to break in to the BDSM scene, so to speak, or how to become aware of those things. Nate, we had, I think, at least one call on that subject. What do you got for us?
We sure do. And Jason, I'd just like to say, like, live a little, man. Why you got to be such a prude?
Sure.
I'm sorry, man. I'll try to be more like you. I need one of those fuck pillows that you have. You know, maybe.
There's no like blood and pain when you're on a very, very soft branded secular sexuality available at merch store pillow. It's a different type of BDSM.
We have so many. Not many. Stains. Dude, our bed is so covered in stains. It's really.
Hey, admittedly, it is a white pillow.
Don't forget to bring a towel. All right, Helen is calling in from Florida. Pronouns are she, her, and she wanted to sort of offer an opinion on what Christy was just talking about, getting started in BDSM. Helen, my friend.
Hey, everybody.
How are you?
How are my kink positive people doing?
Super glad to hear from you. What kind of advice you got for us?
Yeah, so I wanted to comment on what it was like for me when I got involved in the kink community. And keep in mind, this was back in the 90s where the internet didn't exist. So, you know, and I ended up it was when the internet existed, and I did meet a couple people online, but there was no fet life. There was no fetish websites. You just kind of would find people around you that was kind of into kinky shit. But I ended up, going to like munches, and I would go to like kink clubs and got to meet people in the community. So, but now we live in a wonderful world where you can find people in your local community. And I also want to emphasize to people that are trying to dip your toes into the kink community that you don't have to put on your latex outfit and get your whips out and go to a fetish club. You can go to a munch, which is basically you're just getting together with like-minded people, make friends, because you are going to need friends in the kink community and people that you can talk to about like your desires and what to expect, what not to expect, because a lot of people in the kink community are aware of a lot of the bad apples that are part of that community. And especially for new people that are going into the community, they need to find safe people to help them through that process. You know, especially
I really want to echo that and don't have
positive partners.
Yeah. Forgive me for interrupting you, but I really want to highlight that idea. Yeah. I think that people sort of see like, oh, if I'm going to like a munch and I'm meeting other people and, you know, if I'm really like getting deep into it, it feels like a level 5 type of kink, and it shouldn't. It doesn't need to be. Being part of a community is incredibly important no matter where you are in your kink journey. And I can appreciate why it might feel like, well, I can use a feather at home without any advice and support. That's totally true. But as soon as you start to take the wrapper off of some of these things, you're gonna want people around you to support you and to really like weed out the assholes. That's a huge part of why these communities exist, as a way of keeping the foxes out of the herd. So anyway, Helen, please keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I think that's just such a important thing to normalize, is being part of the kink community.
Well, yeah, no, and I really appreciate you reiterating that, because I think that for, you know, people that are looking in on the outside, like they read like 50 Shades of Grey and they think, you know, they have like these fantasies of what kink is. And it's not really that. Like, people like to do kinky shit and they like to explore with other partners and experience their sexuality and find what they like and don't like. But I have found a lot of the people in the kink community are very caring. They're very intelligent. They want people to be educated. Like when you're learning to paddle, please don't paddle kidneys. It's going to end badly. And you know, you get that training on what is safe, you know, and how, like what you were saying, like, what do you do when your partner cannot speak? How do you gauge? You know, how do you check in when your partner cannot speak to you, that, you know, things are getting too much, or go a little lighter, go a little harder? Like, how do you do those things? And you need that community that has that experience both as, you know, if you're a dom or a sub or whatever role you're taking on in the in that community, that you need someone that has a little bit of experience under your belt outside of your partner, even mm-hmm. if your partner has experience and the person that you're playing with, that you need someone that you're not playing with just to form a friendship with to talk about those things outside of that, like any other friendship that you would have, you know, and get that insight. So I think that's really important when you're going into the community and exploring these things, to kind of build trust, because we want, because this is a, you know, part of our lives that's supposed to be fun and learning more about yourself and forming these really interesting relationships. And there's assholes out there, and everybody's got to be aware of the assholes and how to identify them. Because mm-hmm. when people get have those bad relationships, it puts a bad taste and idea of what this community is really all about.
Sure.
Yeah, the logistics of kink are very important. Learning to be good at what you didn't think you needed to know, or didn't know that you didn't know. Jason, what did you think about that?
Well, what you were saying reminded me of Jasmine's call about, I wanted to echo what she was saying, how she did not feel like she was enthusiastically consenting. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to, again, echo what Chrissy said about listening to your own body. So it's, and then going back to what Jamie said about lack of experience, if you don't have enough experience with people that you feel safe around and your body feels good in those situations, you're going to have a hard time gauging what's safe in the future. And you're going to end up mm-hmm. making poor decisions where you end up getting abused and hurt. And in a lot of cases, people don't realize that they're harming you. They're actually thinking they're doing something that you're consenting to, but you're actually not even consenting to it. So I really like what you're saying about finding a friend, maybe one that you're not even involved with, but who knows more about that, just to kind of friendly guidance through that. Mm-hmm. It's I have a friend of mine, an older guy who I've been talking to a lot about coming out as queer. And I'm just like, hey, old man, give me your information. My buddy, John, a really good dude. And I'm just like, John, what's the deal with this? Well, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. Thanks, Sean. You know, and it's just so I agree with anything that you're venturing into. You know, you may be, you know, you need to find your samurai warrior ninja master who teaches you while you're the young student, just learning how to swing the sword, the proverbial kinky sword.
Yeah. Books and forums and podcasts, thank you, are all really valuable for learning about these things, but they don't replace the importance of having a human person that you can ask questions to, share emotions with, and benefit from the experiences of.
Exactly. Right. And I think that kind of gets lost in discussion, because we're always talking about, like, you know, what's going on when you're in, you know, in a scene or, you know, but we're not talking about, you know, the outside relationships you can form within the kink community and how to keep yourself safe, you know, mm-hmm. no matter where you are. It's like, even if you've been in this scene for years, you know, you still need to be able to check in with yourself, check in with other people, making sure that, you know, you're not getting too big for your britches, you know, and like, you know, take your, and get that perspective, because that's what we all need. So I think that, you know, that's just something I really want to emphasize, you know, as a member, you know, because I remember when I started out, I didn't really know what the fuck I was doing, because I was in my 20s, and, you know, when I was in my 20s, I didn't know shit.
But no one knows what they're doing in their 20s, Helen. It's not just you.
Right now I'm an old fart where I wouldn't bestow my wisdom upon the younglings. But, you know, but what helped me, though, is that I met really positive, protective people, the people that were entering the scene that helped me gauge and helped me form friendships, you know, when I first got involved. And I think that because there was, you know, I was in bad scenes. I had things happen to me that weren't always positive. And they helped me able to recognize those things and go, okay, well, what do you want? What kind of boundaries do you want to set? You know, how do you negotiate what is okay and not okay? You know, and how do you have those conversations? And I think that when you're a little fledgling, you know, kinkster, I think those conversations really need to happen, you know, and like, I was in my 20s where I didn't know shit, but if I was even now at 45, if I was going to do this now, I would even want to do that still, because we all need to learn and kind of have that support within the community, especially for those of us that are into this kinky shit and you just can't, like, you know, talk to your normal, your vanilla friends about that type of stuff.
Yeah. fair to say.
Absolutely. Well, Helen, thank you very much for calling in with that perspective. We always like to hear from you on the show. You're a great friend of the show and a great friend of us. We do have some more callers that we want to try to get to. So is there anything that you wanted to leave us with? Give us your final nugget of wisdom.
My final nugget of wisdom is listen to yourself. If you feel uncomfortable, if something doesn't feel right, speak it, know it, and it's okay if it changes, but listen to yourself because you are the best person to know yourself. So trust yourself, and it's okay to do those things and say yes and no as you please. So that's my my last nugget. Love you all. Have a great night. Talk to more people. You guys are awesome.
Hey, thanks, Helen. You have a great night.
Me too.
Thanks. Yeah, that seems to be a recurring theme here is listen to your body, listen to those cues and act on them, respond to them. Mm-hmm. Let's get on. I want to try to get to everybody on the line. So if you've been waiting for a bit, we appreciate your patience and we're going to move on to Everett calling in from Michigan. Pronouns are she, they, and wants to share a time when they tried to do something related to BDSM and didn't know what to do. Thank you for your patience, Everett. You are live.
Hi.
Hey.
So, how do I start this off? So I kind of like slightly like suspension sort of thing, but I'm inside of a household where there is a very, very Christian woman and father that's kind of that lock up your daughter sort of mentality.
Sure. So, yeah. Right. I'll mention that suspension work is not something that you can do casually with like a pair of fuzzy handcuffs. That there's a level of investment that goes into something like that, that you're likely not going to be able to achieve living in somebody else's home.
Definitely not.
Yeah. So
I have a friend of ours who is into that kind of stuff. And yeah, it is not something that you can just tuck away in your bedroom closet when you're done. So go on, Everett.
Yeah. So basically what I did was kind of like get a sturdy sort of scarf and like I put it on like that, you know, that pole that you put your clothes on inside of a closet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was just inside of my closet with that scarf. Thankfully, I didn't get like severely hurt or anything, but like the bruises did happen.
I'm glad you were being safe. Suspension work can be pretty detailed. I'm not an engineer nor a carpenter myself, and for those reasons, I'm pretty hesitant to pursue those things. Certainly, it can be a pretty remarkable experience if you have the opportunity to play around with it. But more so than almost anything else we've talked about tonight, I would say that is a risk-aware kink that you need to be pretty intentional with.
Yeah. I'm going to be setting points in my bedroom here in the next couple weeks. We're setting a couple wall points and a couple ceiling points for swing, suspension, bondage. We just recently bought some new ropes that we're going to start working on, trying to figure that stuff out. So yeah, I agree. It's I don't know about the closet pole. That was definitely a brave of you, but I appreciate the MacGyver aspect of it. So
yeah.
Infrastructure is important when it comes to that.
Also speaking from personal experience, you know the saying online that happened at one point of like anything's a dildo if you're brave enough? It isn't. Sure. You can get hurt.
I've heard that line. Yeah.
Yeah. Be smart about what you put inside your body. No matter how you interpret that sentence, I think it's probably still true and good advice. So thank you, Everett. We hope you have a great night.
You too.
Yeah. Bye. Take care.
You know, I am interested in y'all's experiences. While you're pulling up the next call, Nate, I wanted to very, very briefly answer a question from the chat asking about a potential problem of toxic masculinity in the kink community. And I, you know, we've talked about that idea before, and I don't want to dismiss it by any means, but I would go so far as to say that the kink community in large part exists in order to get rid of that element. I recognize that, you know, it can be a little bit of a no true Scotsman fallacy for me to sit here and be like, well, there are no toxic men inside the kink community, when clearly there are. But these communities serve to identify and then eventually exclude those people. I've described it, I think one of the best ways to think about it is the kink community is a bunch of wagons in a circle ready to protect folks. And people who are new to kink can sometimes be predated upon as they are walking to that circle. And then they start to think that the kink community itself is full of those predators, when I don't know that that's a entirely accurate thing. Does that line up with either of y'all's experience?
I mean, I couldn't have said it better, man. I really couldn't have said it any better. I like the illustration you gave about as they're on their way to that community. Again, that has to do with lack of experience. And that's what we were hitting upon earlier. It's just to have a trust, to have at least one person you can trust is worth its weight in gold. And I really, I'm still viewing that illustration of walking on your way to there. I was having conversation with somebody recently about, as they were coming out and they were starting to get to know people and meet dudes and stuff like that, and different bars they're going to here in town. And they started to learn which bars were the safe bars, which bars were the ones where people were being not so safe, and which ones were the bars full of the predators. And we had the certain bars kind of down the street from where we used to live where, okay, this spot, that's cool. You know, nobody's going to be gross there. You know, there's nobody scamming on anybody. That place, it's kind of give or take. You know, you'll probably be safe. That place, no, stay away from that place.
Yeah, but then, you know, it's real.
It's a real thing. Yeah, it really is. And especially within something that presents itself as a safe kink community, you just have to be careful. You have to kind of know, I guess, the signals and the whistles, and kind of know what people are hinting at, and pay attention to an area for a while before you start investing time into it. I think that's the key. It's like, especially like with for me, everything goes back to fighting. I'm not just going to rush right in and start swinging. I need to figure out what this person's got. You know, I need to watch some video on them. I need to take some time, maybe let them jab at me a little bit here and there. And then, okay, cool. They move their head when I do this. They do this. It's really, they don't hit as hard as I thought, maybe, or holy shit, they hit hard. You know, so translate that to your social environment. If you just walk in and automatically, you know, somebody greets you with open arms, and maybe you've been suppressing it for 40 years, like, you know, some people I might know, you're like, yeah, somebody. But you know, it's really crazy. I was at a party with my partner. A quick example, I was at a party with my partner, and I swore that a dude there was hitting on me. And I swear he was hitting on me, you know? And then it turned out that the dude is married. And I'm like, well, that's cool. You know, maybe, you know, and then my partner's like, yeah, but do you think his wife knows? I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Mm. She's like, yeah, you're new to this stuff. So you have to really be aware of like what's really going on. Yeah, you're happy somebody's hitting on you and you're actually okay with it and you're accepting of it and blah, blah, blah. But like that person might have a partner. You know, I'm like, holy shit. I didn't. Yeah, you're right.
And even if that's not your ethical responsibility to be responsible for, you don't want to get involved with somebody who has like that liability or who is being deceptive in those ways. Like those are all pretty dangerous red flags. That point well taken.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Good call. So what about you, Nate? What you got?
I'm just loving this episode because I just get to play phone operator and you two are just knocking it out of the park with your analogies. So this is great for me. Do you want to move on to Zelly?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Let's get Zelly on. She has been so patient with us. Pronouns are she, her, calling in from Georgia. And Zelly wants to talk about demisexuality and identity. Thank you for your patience. You are live on Secular Sexuality.
Yes. Hello, Christy, Nate, and Jason. And it's Zoe, not Zelly. And
Zoe.
Nathan, we've talked many times. Yes.
Yeah,
that is I, and that is us.
That is us.
We're a trans woman, and we also have a dissociative disorder. So if I switch from seeing a plural pronouns, that's what's going on there. But identity itself is something that we really like to talk about. There's a lot of aspects of like sexuality, gender, that sort of thing. And one of the fascinating aspects of that is like sometimes people say, well, how do I know I'm gay or how do I know I'm trans or something like that? And we kind of define identity for others as saying like, just think of what your thoughts, your feelings, your perceptions, and your memories essentially are what most people mean when they say I in that sense. Sure. And then your sexuality is one facet of that. And that would be on a sliding scale, like a spectrum. And then we explore that throughout our lives, like from the times that we're, you know, first going into puberty, and then like in your 20s and that sort of thing. As you're moving through life, this is constantly developing. And it's different for like every person. And that's why like we always try to point out to people, like there is no one way to know for sure that you have some specific identity. It's not like, oh, I did this one thing and now I'm trans, or I did this one thing and now this makes me gay. You can just have the identity, but it's also good to know what you're exploring as well and kind of what direction you're moving in and what you're comfortable with. And as, as far as demisexuality, go ahead.
Oh, I was really just going to say that I think you're talking about some important ideas when we get into like consciousness and who is I and what does that actually mean and how do I figure out my identity? And these are questions that we spent a good amount of time on in an episode last summer that I'll make sure is in the show notes for this one, because it was a really good time. And I love a good naval contemplation about identity and about consciousness and these kinds of things. Tell me how this idea helps you to explore or understand your demisexuality.
So as far as demisexuality goes, like we realized pretty early on that it seemed like there wasn't really, we're not physically attracted to people in the traditional way that somebody looks at someone and say like, oh, they're beautiful, they're gorgeous, or like that, you know, it makes me like wet or something. Instead, we would have to get to know somebody and essentially become like friends with them. And we are attracted to people's like personalities, essentially. And it's like the closer friends we are with somebody, the more we could be intimate with them. But one of the reasons why we tie identity to sexuality so much is like having a dissociative disorder, not all of our various identities share the same sexuality. So having to explore that process over and over and try and work through like, okay, well, what does make us this way? Like what, when we call ourselves like demisexual or like panromantic, what does that mean? And I feel like a lot of times, especially when people talk about asexuality or just being asexual, a lot of people just imagine that as like, oh, well, you're just not sexually attracted to people in their traditional way. And while that's fair, I would say like, you know, there is a gray spectrum as well. All of sexuality seems like it's on a spectrum of some type, and it's where do you fit in there? And a lot of people seem to be confused when we talk about like having no sexual attraction to somebody unless we're friends with them or get to know them, like their personality first. But for some reason, that's always been that way for us. And even in like our teens, when we were going through counseling and therapy, one of the most damaging things to us was we had a therapist try to tell us that there was something wrong with us for having a sexuality like that. They specifically said that there's, you know, something wrong with us if we don't find people attractive. Like we can't look at someone and say like, oh, I understand this person is like sexually attractive. They're just not. We have to get to know them first. And that's pretty much our primary experience with it.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you bringing your unique perspective here. You're right. When we're talking about sexuality, but really kind of all human behavior, we are looking at spectrums on top of spectrums. I mean, basically, it's spectrums all the way down as we become more and more individual and more specific. And all of those spectrums slide and flow and have a fluidity to them. So I can appreciate why the Tucker Carlsons of the world want to, like, you know, futz their face and become frustrated about these conversations. But Zoe, I really appreciate that we can just all acknowledge that we are different human beings and the exploration of the self is a beautiful thing.
Oh, and I would say, I guess a lot of people complain about labels and they'll say everything has to have a box and this is all like some part of like an agenda or something like that. Mm-hmm. And what I push back on that with is I would say that labels are just shorthand to summarize and experiences that you're trying to relay to somebody or to let them know that you have a specific set of interests or there is this part of you and that even if we don't necessarily label ourselves and we say like we're just going to be in the questioning area of like LGBTQ, I would say that it's fine to be in that questioning area. And even if you don't ever adopt a label, it's okay to explore these areas and hopefully find yourself while doing so, because that's the only way that humans, that's the only way you can know this about yourself is through exploring and having those experiences. There is no like gold standard to determine what makes you straight, gay, whatever else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I understand what you're saying, Zoe, that it is so frustrating when simple minds prefer simple answers. And that's what it seems like it is with the Tucker Carlsons of the world, because I can totally relate to what you're saying, because I myself have sort of flirted with the labels of gay and bi over the years. And I've sort of come to the conclusion that I don't really care which one people use, because I'm a monogamous person who's found their forever human. So I don't, you know, it just doesn't really matter to me, but I totally can relate with how frustrating that can be. Jason, what did you have to say?
You know, I think Zoe, you and I have even talked about this concerning the label pan or versus bi. And it's, I feel like I'll use the term bi just because it's quicker and a little bit easier. Like for me, the term atheist I use because it's a little quicker and easier. I definitely view myself more as an atheist, but atheist is a little more understandable, a little quicker, still kind of carries the same connotation. So I do understand that, because whenever I look at my sexuality, like I'm monogamous, I'm currently with a cis female, but you know, there's always open, there's stuff possibly open for the future, and I would be with anybody. And I have to admit that about myself. And I find, you know, my pornography collection, or not collection, nobody has a collection anymore, but you know, my search history,
digital library.
Not, yeah. My digital library is not,
you got
just
a bookmarks folder, Jason. Don't lie.
I mean, well, I know exactly what I'm going to. I know the actors I enjoy. And sometimes it's two dudes. Sometimes it's two dudes and a chick. Sometimes it's 27 people, and I'm not really sure, you know, what's really going on, but it's great all together. You know, so no, I agree. It's there's definitely like a fluid label thing. But I think labels can also help, because by me saying bi, it's definitely a very quick differentiation between me and the heteronormative expectation that's placed on me within my society. So for me, that just helps with that, you know, and it also helps to combine community. It helps to kind of understand where your allies are. You know, it's like, okay, we share a very common thing and a common struggle, you know, so I think labels can be useful in that point, but we also have to be willing to understand that they are fluid, just like the human experience.
Fair to say. I mean, Zoe, does that line up with your experience? There you go.
Yes. Thank y'all for taking our call, and hope y'all have a wonderful night and everybody finds lots of orgasms.
Well, I will. Thank you so much. It's going to happen. Yeah, thank you, Zoe. Take care.
Thank you, Zoe, for calling in. Sorry we got your name wrong, but we got her fixed out. All right. We are almost out of time, but I want to squeeze in Dane here with a quick lightning round call. Dane, I'm sorry we got so inundated with calls here, but we wanted to talk to you here at the tail end of the show. Pronouns are he, him, calling in from Washington with some observations on the fluidity of roles. What's
hey,
on your
good
mind?
Good afternoon.
Hey.
Actually, this is dovetailing perfectly into what Zoe was just speaking about. Been in the scene about 12 years. I've been a scene influencer. I've been a mentor. Done a lot of various things. I actually worked for CSTC for a while in Seattle, which is a big club, a big hot spot for the scene. But I wanted to address a couple of misconceptions. I think a lot of individuals kind of viewing BDSM from the outside generally have. And I wanted to, I guess, bounce off a few of the different ideas that other people thought of too. But anyway, fluidity of roles. What do I mean by that? I think one of the misconceptions that individuals have, particularly when they're not very familiar with BDSM or the lifestyle, is mm-hmm. that people tend to fall very specifically into, I'm a top, I'm a submissive, I'm going to be a pet, you know, and they kind of pick their flavor, and that's what they kind of speaks to them. I think from an outside perspective, they don't realize that these things change with experience, and that like Zoe was talking about with demisexuality, you may have different experiences depending on who you are with or around.
Yeah, and the partner, I mean, these things are dynamics, right? So there's there's going to be a push and a pull, whichever way you slice it, and who you are is going to be strongly brought out by who you are with.
Right, yeah, and it's not uncommon for you to feel drawn to other things, whether that's I want to try something, or it's I am really interested in this activity, and you meet somebody that actually knows that skill and you want to experience that a little bit more fully. Or you have, as long as you have a partner that you trust and have built a foundation with, you have a construct to maybe try some of those things. Mm-hmm. But expectations and your identity with your goals is going to change. A lot of times I call it wearing hats. You put on a different hat for, a different feeling.
Yeah, I think that's a really valuable idea, because whether we are actively engaged in some sort of elaborate role play or not, there's real value, I think, in not necessarily keeping our sex life completely separate from the rest of our life, but to recognizing that it's a form of play, that it's a bit of silliness. And so our sexuality is often going to be a way of exploring different facets of our personality, different facets of our identity that may or may not accurately represent, quote, the whole. And, we can talk about, again, consciousness and identity and some of these ideas all night, but there's real value, I believe, in recognizing that none of this needs to be taken too seriously, and that if you are willing to play around, to try on different hats, then you can learn a lot about yourself, a lot about your partner, and a lot about your world in ways that might surprise you.
Absolutely. Honestly, when you're not always the one in charge, like if you're putting a dominant hat to the side, when you're approaching a task, whether it's learning something from somebody else or being a little bit more analytical about your interests or something, it gives you an opportunity to maybe broaden your understanding about something. And it gives you that opportunity to be a little bit more open to perspective.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so if I could jump on this. I really like that. So when I started reversing roles with my partner right now, for one, I think the person that you're doing it with is of course the most important thing. You feel safe and comfortable with that person. And for me, I'm very Demi. So is my partner. And the more I'm with them, the more I love them. And it's like the more I want to have sex with them. And it's really interesting. But so again, like I was saying, I'm really dominant. It's just real natural to me. But we've been doing reversal stuff, and I've been allowing her to dominate me. And it's really interesting. Like I finally got empathy for how hard I go. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh, this is what it's like.
It's a good experience. It's a good set of experience to have.
Yeah, it's like, this is what it's like to have somebody do this to somebody. Oh, maybe I should be a little more conscientious. Maybe. Yeah, it's a big eye-opener, it really is.
One of the other things.
An eye-opener, and it's a lot of fun, too.
Well, yeah, it is a lot of fun.
I think when we have power exchanges within BDSM, it gives us an opportunity to really incorporate in a lot of trust-building exercises. A lot of our playtime and the way that we approach various things, what is the vanilla equivalent to the trust building exercises that we are attempting to build or improve upon on a regular basis?
Yeah, fair question.
Most vanilla couples are going to be they're going to have a difficult time explaining. Well, this is what we do to build trust, right? Well, if you ask a BDSM couple what they're doing, they have, this and this and this and this, and we talked about this and this and this, it's just something that's built into the construct or the power exchange that we participate in this lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. That is an excellent observation. Yeah, for sure. All right, Dane, we are approaching the end of the show, and I want to get in one little element for our mailbag. But Jason, did you have any final thoughts before we move on?
No, I really appreciate Dane's perspective on this. It's
a
big, we had a conversation. on the ACD last night for the Brain Matter stuff that we do with me and my partner. And we talked about boundaries and consent. And it's funny because we give each other, me, my partner, and of course my daughter, we give each other constant feedback. And if somebody gets their feelings hurt when receiving feedback, yeah. we roast each other for it because it's loving, but it's like, no, you need to be able to take feedback. And sure. We have open communication in our household. And oh no, something I said, I set a boundary. You got to deal with it. Yeah, you're right. I do.
You know, honestly, my final thought is how advantageous doing like an after action report is, where you've talked about what you want to do, then you've gone and done it, and then you discuss how did it go, what were your perceptions, how did it turn out. I think that type of openness is an excellent way to build communication within your dynamic.
Don't skip leg day. Don't skip aftercare. Yeah. It's just as important.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
We call it debriefing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We call it debriefing in our household. Well, we'll do something and then afterwards we discuss it. We're like, well, what do you think about that? What was that like? Well, you know, I mean, it's like, it's just, I couldn't avoid it with my partner. You know, it's just how we are, you know? So it's good. Yeah, that's a really good comment.
People are so different. You know, it's ultimately at some point you're going to make a mistake or you're going to go overboard or, you know, there's something that's going to come up. And by providing a structure to address those type of concerns, it makes you open, it makes your relationship a little bit more healthy, and you're not dealing with negative associated feelings with it long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. You're totally right, man.
Well, Dana, I want to thank you for your patience in waiting to get on today. And thank you for that message. That was it was super cool to hear and absolutely important.
All right. Well, have a great day.
All right. So we're going to squeeze in a email from our mailbag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What you got?
Yes. All right. So we have an email from Roger. And Roger says, I'm going to go through this a bit quickly. I've been in a relationship for 10 years now. We were both raised in Christian fundamentalism. That means the only people we have been with are each other. I'm in my 30s now, and I'm not really sure what to expect from a relationship. My fear is that my wife and I are sexually incompatible. She almost never needs sex and is completely happy just never being intimate. Whereas I feel quite strongly that I want sex very often. I don't want to get divorced, but I'm very unhappy with the way my relationship is. Is it selfish of me to be considering a divorce because I don't want to be married to someone who doesn't need sex like I do? We've been to marriage counselor, read books, nothing's improved. I think we might just be incompatible, but I have no relationship to compare this to. I don't know if that's legitimate or not. I'd appreciate any insight. Roger, wow.
Ooh, yeah, these are big questions, and I don't want to do anything to diminish them, but I guess I just want to recognize that they're also very, very common, particularly with folks who have left a really strong fundamentalist type religion that wants to tell them about their sexuality. I don't know how much the three of us can do to answer questions about your marriage in that way, but the thing that the hill I will absolutely die on, the thing that I absolutely do feel comfortable saying to you, Roger, as a stranger on the internet, is that yes, this is a valid reason to end a relationship. It does not fall to me at all to tell you that you should end your relationship. There are so many other steps to take first. There are so many ways to approach this and potentially find healing. But I want to say to anybody who can hear the sound of my voice that sex is allowed to be important in your relationship. Doesn't have to be, but it absolutely can be. And we so often treat the undersexed partner, the partner who wants more sex, as if they are immature, irresponsible. Yep. And I absolutely reject that. Your needs are just as valid as your partner's needs. And if y'all's needs are different, then that may not be anybody's fault, but it is a problem that you're allowed to take seriously. How does that strike you two gentlemen?
That's excellent advice.
Well, I agree.
Yeah. I've been in relationships myself where our libidos just don't match up. And I wasn't married to that person, but I can definitely say that it can be a deal breaker. And it's okay for it to be a deal breaker. Like, you're allowed to have non-matching libidos. I don't think there's anything wrong with stating that and with owning it And I would wager that if you're not happy, she's probably not happy either.
Yeah, sure.
I can't speak to your relationship, but that would be my guess. So sorry, Jason, go ahead.
No. It's real hard for me to understand why ending a marriage is such a, I mean, it's sad, of course, and there's a lot of stuff you have to go through.
Sure.
But I don't understand why it's such a like horrific thing to do. Like it's just,
why do we moralize it? Why do we treat people like they're awful for even considering it? I think that's valid.
And because all you have is a document. That's what the marriage is, and time, right? So without the document, you're still just two people together. You can be two people who are no longer together, or it could be risk. You could even say, hey, I want to save this marriage, but I need to get laid more. What about bringing somebody? I mean, there's a lot of options, and it may drive that person away. They may have latent type of Christian-ish beliefs that are still held over. Lack of experience has kind of been a theme of what we've talked about tonight. And there might be a lot of that. And I agree with both of y'all. That is very much a reason to end a relationship. If you don't align on something that is super important, it doesn't matter if it's not important to the other person. Cleanliness could be the thing we're talking about right now. We could be talking about, I don't like the way you smell. I mean, it's really, if you don't feel comfortable in your body and you find yourself doing things you're not really consenting to enthusiastically, it's time to reconsider. And I think both of y'all said, it's like that other person might not be happy. They probably aren't. So maybe you can just end it before you guys have, you know, I mean, I'm not saying end, I'm not saying recommend it, but just don't hurt each other anymore. I don't know. You know, sometimes ending a marriage keeps further pain from happening. I don't know.
Yeah. And like if you're 30 and you've been married for 10 years, like I would question whether you really knew what you were getting into.
Oh yeah. Right?
I know when I was 20, I was fucking dumb. I definitely didn't know.
Force majeure on account of being 20, 22, 25. Yeah, I'm going to admit to having gotten married at 21. And I will absolutely take that mulligan. That's not at all to dismiss this relationship, but it is reasonable that you may not want to stay in it. And if you feel like you've already been to marriage counselors, if you feel like you've read the books and she's not interested, she's not engaged in making that change because you're just being irresponsible or you're just being sex obsessed or whatever else.
Yeah.
That would be a real problem for me. If that's not the case, if she's here, if she cares, if she's interested and invested and wanting to figure out something that works for both of y'all, I sincerely hope that you find it. I will only say that it's valid for this issue to matter. And whatever it is that you decide, it's not unreasonable for you to take this problem seriously.
Yep, I agree. 100%.
My final thought would be, Roger, beware the sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah, well said.
Oh, yeah. You have the idea of the irrevocability of the decision. Like, I've put so much time into this. I've put so much work into this. Right. And why would I change it now? It's already been 10 years. I mean, man, I mean, from somebody who was married for 15 years, and is nothing against my ex-wife. She's a wonderful co-parent, amazing mom. We just didn't gel. I'm super happy that we're both able to move on because I'm with a partner now that does gel in other areas that were important. I mean, it's just one of those things. I don't know if you have a kid with the person. That makes it difficult, but I know in my case, we co-parent. It happens. A lot of laws have changed. You don't automatically get your rights taken away from you. Like, it's a lot of things have changed that have benefit generally, which is pretty, you know, generally it's male and female for the law but I mean, even for queer couples, I mean, there's a lot of things have changed legally when it comes to family rights. I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but
it's okay. Yeah, in my experience too, my ex and I that I have kids with, we get along so much better now that we're not together.
Oh, dude.
So much better friends, but we do need to wrap up. So, Jason, where can people find you? Are you in some sort of band, sir?
I play in a band called Piss Test, or we call PTFU. Yeah, there we are. We yell a lot. We're loud and fast and sing about absurdist shit.
Lars Fredriksson up there?
Oh my God.
I can't be the first person to say that.
It's worse. Yeah. Low hanging fruit right there, man. And I'm on the ACD Discord. Every Wednesday, I host a show. It's kind of a group thing called Brain Matters, and we talk about psychology. I'm finishing up my undergrad. I'm getting my Bachelor of Science in Psychology, then going on to the master's and the PhD. So you can find me on there every Wednesday. I'm also a facilitator on there. So I just kind of a bouncer trying to keep the party going, you know, and just making sure everybody's hanging out and you know, not drinking too heavily. But yeah, I mean, you can go on Instagram. I'm on Instagram. I make tattoo machines and talk a lot of shit, cool. I guess, you know. So.
Cool, cool. And for the record, I would be flattered if anybody compared me to Lars Fredriksson. So
I know. I appreciate you. Yeah, he's a good looking guy.
He's not bad. All right, folks. You can keep up with what's happening with the atheist community of Austin on our website. We want to get more folks involved with our website. It's atheist-community.org. You can email this show specifically, sex@atheistcommunity.org. You can email the ACA generally, tv@atheistcommunity.org. But check out the website and get involved. Also, some big news. Our next live show is going to be Sunday, September the 25th. We have Talk Heathen with Dan and a surprise guest. And we have the Atheist Experience with Matt and Andrew Seidel. Wow, that is, I cannot wait to see that episode. That is going to be great. So if you're in the area, come on down. Definitely don't miss that show, because those shows, because they're going to be great. Also, if you missed some of the other shows, you saw it in the promo, you thought it was great, you thought, where can I find that content? Well, you could go to tiny.cc/AEN podcast, your one-stop shop for all the audio versions of our shows. Check it out. Everything's there. If you want to stay in touch or continue the conversation, you could do so on the Facebook Secular Sexuality fan group. That is at tiny.cc/FBSSG. We're all there, so come on in and hang out. As Jason was saying, he hosts Brain Matters on the Atheist Community of Discord. So you can find them at tiny.cc/ACD Discord. There's a lot of cool cats on there. Some of the callers tonight, I think, are calling in from the ACD. Yeah, Zoe, yeah. Right. I'm pretty sure I've seen a lot of those folks around. So yeah, you can talk and to Helen. Them, continue the conversation. Helen's
everywhere. Helen's everywhere.
Yes, she's taking over. Is, that's right. Yeah, it's a Helen Nation. And finally, folks, you saw the pillow I showed off. You saw that merch. Why not get yourself a pillow of your own at tiny.cc/merchaca. Get that awesome pillow. You can get a safe word t-shirt, which kind of dovetails nicely into our topic today. Safe word is pumpkin. So feel free to visit tiny.cc/merchaca and get yourself some swag. And finally, before we go, let's have a look at the hardworking folks who do so much so that us three dum-dums can sit up here and talk for an hour and a half. Thank you very much, crew, for everything that you do. And I will throw it back to Christy.
Yeah, no, it's been a great time tonight. We have covered a lot of things. I think I want to remind everybody that kink is something that you want to be not just careful about, but again, in community over, that you want to be talking to people about these things, because it can feel, it can get a little dangerous when you go alone. So bring a friend. Other than that, what kind of final thoughts would y'all like to leave the audience with tonight?
Kink can be scary, but it is so much fun.
I really appreciate the open, consensual aspect of kink, and it's made every aspect of my relationship with my partner and with other people better, because I'm just learning to listen to other people's wants and needs and pay attention to signals and just be a more conscientious humanist, you know? So I appreciate this journey, and I'm excited to go down more scary trails. I don't know. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, fair to say. Well, running a little bit long tonight. Really good time. Thank you all both so much. Thank you to everybody who watched, who participated in the chat. I really enjoyed all of the conversation and the calls tonight. And I suppose there's not a whole lot left to do other than to grab your pillow, pick out your safe word, maybe open your mind a little bit, and give yourself a big old orgasm. Or better yet, give somebody else one.
Watch Tall Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytth and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callth.